And welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman. Co-hosting with me today will be Giannis Giannaeus and Mike Gregg. In this episode, we will be discussing the 2-1 loss for Fulham against Hull City. This was an extremely disappointing loss once again as Fulham give up a late goal and unfortunately lose, like I mentioned, 2-1. We have much to get through, and hopefully Giannis will be joining us shortly. But in the meantime, I do have Mike Gregg on the line, and Mike was actually at the KC Stadium. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm very good, Russ. Thanks very much. It was a long trip back, but had a good sleep during today, so I'm wide awake and ready to go with the show.
Okay, fantastic. And listen, let's get right into this. Just share with me your opening thoughts about what you watched last night. You were one of about 300 Fulham supporters that made the trek, and just talk about what you watched there last night.
Yeah, well, it was pretty much a repeat of the Brighton game, really. We're so slow out the blocks for a game, and we just didn't play again. And Hull were very, very good, well-organised, passed the ball well, and in that first half, they were tearing us apart, pretty much. Not a lot on target for them. I mean, they did score, obviously, but, you know, they hit the bar. A lot of half chances for them, or we were giving them chances, you know, headers wide. We just never had any fluency. We weren't playing a particular style at all. We weren't knocking it that long. We were trying to pass it, but nothing coming off. Too many players were under par in that first. Unfortunately, Bozo had problems on his side. He got hard a couple of times. And it was all a bit disjointed point. And then the injuries at the end of that half, which was right for the Fulham, just made it a horrible first half for us. But actually, which had to be made, certainly Dembele going on, made it better. And we had some movement, pace, and they actually gave. And there was a 20-minute spell. You watched it earlier on, didn't you, Russ?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was a 20-minute spell in that second half where we were in there, camped in front of their goal, really. And, you know, Ken came up with a great goal. We were getting the tackles in. We were working hard. And, you know, and you're thinking, oh, yeah, get away with a draw. That would be good. But then, you know, another lapse of concentration. You look at the. It's a bit of a mess. Bloke's unmarked. Bodrov's not running back to challenge him. And, you know, we go away with a 2-1. So it's disappointing. But it's the same old story. When I saw the lineup, I didn't like the lineup. And all the errors, all the mistakes we can see happen. And it's just a case of what we do now. I mean, it's, for me, we're points down on where we should be already. And it makes Saturday's game very important. But I will say that the 300 fans there were great. And it's just a pity that the team can't play two halves in a row.
Listen, I couldn't agree with you more, Mike. And I want to talk about the 300 fans, because you probably didn't see this while you were at that match, but I certainly saw this. And again, social media can be a nasty place. And when I see all these tweets coming from Hull City about the fact that there are only 300 of you, really irritated me. I'm not going to be shy in saying this, because again, when I look at the overall attendance at the KC Stadium, it only being 16,000, and you guys are complaining, the Hull City supporters are complaining that there are 300 Fulham supporters that had to make that long trek. Just shut up. That's all I'm going to say about that. I could actually hear the 300 Fulham supporters, Mike, and I think they deserve credit than some of the criticism that they got, my friend.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for myself, it was a four-hour drive up there. I mean, it wasn't bad for going up, because I stopped and spoke to and met David for lunch, the other co-host of the show, and, you know, had a good chat with him, saw him, and he's doing well following his operation and everything, so that broke the trip up. But, you know, it's 4 hours back as well, and then the people on the coach, a bit longer, some have gone up by train. But let me just say, Russ, and one of the issues for this particular game was I wasn't sure if I was going to go or not. But right. How we're not going to be selling tickets today, away fans. So I could not have woken up yesterday morning and said to myself, "I'll to Hull and take the game in." I had to on Monday go into London to Craven Cottage, pick up my ticket, come back out again, and then you know yesterday drive up to Hull. So clubs are shooting themselves in the foot. For games like this, where it's not going to be a sellout, and so you know there might have been 100 other fans who on the day thought, yeah, let's go and take the game in, and they wouldn't have been allowed in. And I will say that as a member of the FST, we are going to take that up with raise it at one of these supporters meetings about what's the issue, why are the clubs going stopping walk-in trade, because that's. And so they're money away, and it just and for these kind of midweek trips, there's a you may have seen it or not, Russ, but there was Carlisle away at Plymouth on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
If you know England, if you look on the map, it's two teams that could play together, and it's a midweek game. And you know, I think they took 68 fans or whatever it was, and The Football League and the Premier League at times as well, they have fixtures and think about the fans, how they these kind of games. These type of games should be on a Saturday. I mean, I could not go by train and come back the same night at Hull. It was impossible. So hence I had to drive. We were very vocal. There was from the lads who liked to back of the ground, and it was just disappointing. It was a little bit damp and dry and wet, but I'd never found it very bland outside as a stadium, horrible stadium. Inside it's fine. It's one of those new ones. You change the colour of the seats, you could be on the ground in the country once, but quiet the whole fans. But pleased with the turnout from the Fulham guys.
Okay, fantastic. And Mike, for whatever reason, you're coming in a little bit choppy. I don't know if you want to try dialing back in. Let's see if we can get a better connection. And I'll keep it going while you dial back in, if that's okay, Mike. Okay, Mike has dropped off, and that's not a problem. Hopefully, Mike will be coming back on again now. We're just dealing with some technical issues as we've been dealing with on Cottage Talk, so I do apologize. And hopefully, we'll get a clear connection with Mike. But in the meantime, again, I just want to go over the starting 11, as Mike was mentioning. The starting 11 was Marcus Bettinelli, Kai Voser at left back, Nikolai Bodaroff, and Sean Hutchinson as your center backs, Jazz Richards as your right back. Your central midfielders were Jamie O'Hara and Lasse Vigan Christensen. On the left was Ben Pringle. On the right was Tom Kearney. And up front was Ross McCormack. And then of course Matt Smith, and that was the starting 11. And unfortunately, late on in the first half, as Mike was mentioning, there was that injury between Marcus Bettinelli and of course Matt Smith. They collided, and looks like they both have knee injuries, and so they both had to go off. And Andy Larnigan came on for Marcus Bettinelli, and Moussa Dembele came on for Matt Smith. This was late in the first half, so. Those were your substitutes. And later on in the match, I believe it was Ben Pringle coming off, and of course Alex Kaczyniklich coming on in his place. So those were the players that played last night for Fulham Football Club. All right. And as we wait for Mike to return, and hopefully he'll be returning shortly, I'm just going to go over the stats, because what's interesting about the stats is it looks like a pretty even match for Fulham and Hull City. The possession was, believe it or not, pretty much 50-50. Total shots had Hull at 10, Fulham at 8. Shots on target, Hull only had 2, Fulham had 4. Shooting accuracy, Hull was at 20%, Fulham were at 50%. Key passes, Hull were at 8, Fulham were at 6. Crosses, again, Hull double Fulham, pretty much doubled with 31, and Fulham had 16. Crossing accuracy, Hull was at 29%. Fulham were at 19%. Corners, Hull were at 6 and Fulham were at 1. And then fouls had Hull at 8 and Fulham at 9. So those are your stats. But what's interesting about it is that basically it looks like a pretty even match. Obviously, unfortunately, the score line wasn't even. I've got Mike back on. Mike, are you with me? Can you hear me, Mike? Okay. For whatever reason, I'm not hearing Mike. And again, we're having technical difficulties with Mike. So hopefully he will call back in. And we continue to have issues with blogtalkradio.com. And I was told that their issues were taken care of, but we're still having issues. All right. Well, while I wait for Mike to try back and dial back in, let's go through the key moments. And of course, we have to start with the first half. When we look at the first half, basically the first 25 minutes, there was really not a hell of a lot going on. Basically, it was back and forth, really not much flow to the match, as Mike was talking about earlier. And unfortunately, around the 25th minute mark, I would say that's when Hull really got into the match and we're really starting to get crosses into the box and really starting to build momentum. And the goal actually came in the 34th minute. And if I'm being honest, that goal was coming. It was a goal by Ahmed El Mohammadi, scored on a header from close range. And this was set up by a cross from Andrew Robertson, but it also started from a short corner. And Fulham were down 1-0 in the 34th minute. And like I mentioned, this was a goal that I felt was going to come from Holland. Listen, they deserve to take the early lead 1-0. And basically in the first half, they could have been up 2 or 3-0. So for Fulham to get out of the first half, only down 1-0 is definitely, I would say, a serious accomplishment there. And then we go back a little bit before the end of the half in the 43rd minute, like I was mentioning, you had the injuries to Marcus Bettinelli and Matt Smith as they collided, and Andy Larnigan comes on and Moussa Dembele come on to take their place. So then we move on to the second half. And what's interesting about the second half is, like we have seen in other matches, the opposition seems to start strong against Fulham, and Hull came out strong again and to start the second half. But as the second half went on, there was a good period of time where Fulham really started to get a hold of the match. And let me see if I got Mike on. We'll try him one more time. Mike, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Russ. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I can hear you now, Mike. Oh, modern technology. I love modern technology, my friend. Listen, I've been going through the statistics. Before we move on and break down the match, what I find interesting about the stats, Mike, is that everything was pretty even. You know, again, possession was even. I know possession is not usually, you know, a good barometer of how a game went, but it was pretty much 50-50. And the shots were only 10-8 shots on target. We actually had more shots on target. Key passes were 8-6 to Hull. The one big difference, Mike, which I noticed, was their crosses almost doubled us. I think that was the biggest difference. And that showed pretty much the danger of Hull in this match. What do you make about the stats being even?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny enough, my old man, I spoke to him earlier, and he said he looked at the stats and it looked an even game. But the thing was, you would have seen it if you've watched the game either live or on the replay. They had a lot of chances. So there's headers going across goal. There's right. Crosses coming in. And so, no, you know, you wouldn't say that Betts or Lonergan were that busy as such. But they were more dangerous in the possession areas. Yes, we had shots. I mean, you know, Kearney had a shot which almost hit the roof of the stand a few minutes before he scored. So, you know, they were much more dangerous in that sense. But it was the second half. Like I said, you know, first half we didn't do anything. Second half, we were much better.
Right.
About crossing-wise.
Yeah.
Sorry, Russ. Crossing-wise, yes, they killed us on both sides, especially, unfortunately, on Vosa's side. Their wingers and fullbacks work really well together. They're always looking to run into space, complete opposite to what we're doing. I think we had one over, and that was, you saw Richards get down the wing once in the second half. I think we got a corner from it as well, but that was the only time. But I think a lesson, if anyone wants to see how fullbacks and wingers should play together, watch the Wolves side against Vosa in the first half, because they absolutely killed him and Pringle.
Right, right. Yeah, you meant the Hull side, but yes. Yeah. You know, because again, watching back, Mike, and I watched back the match, and I always like watching back the match to see if it matches what I listened to, and I'm gonna tell you, it was actually a little bit worse than what I listened to, because again, like I said, to see the crosses, like you said, to see the overlap, and to see how the fullbacks and the wingers work together, you know, Kitt should be looking at this tape and say, you know what, we need to be doing a better job. Let's look at what Hull did against us. You know, learn from this, because again, like you said, especially glad that you brought up Vozer against Vozer, it looked very dangerous. And but for the most part, they did a decent job of handling it. But like you said, for a huge spell of this game, how we're in control. But then we came into the game in the second half. I already talked about the goal in the first half, so I don't want to go back to that. But I want to move to the second half, Mike, because where did you see the change coming in the second half? Because again, Hull started off pretty good in the second half, but then Fulham came into the match. What changed in the second half that got us more on the front foot, I guess?
Well, it was certainly the enforced substitution and bringing Dembele on that made a difference. I thought the first 5-10 minutes, we were still a little bit slow in the second half.
Right.
But then, you know, we found our foot. We got on, you know, we got in their half. Dembele was making some good runs. Kearney also, because in the first half, Kearney was very much on the wing, hardly went inside. And then he seemed to have a bit more, either given a free roll or just decided, I'm going to go looking for the ball. And he got much more involved. And it's interesting that our best performances so far or spells have been when Kearney's gone inside, and I think we need to find a way of utilising that and getting the best out of him. And we've seen it from two goals what he does, but he's got a good passing range on it, and we're not seeing it out on the wing. So we need to resolve that. And O'Hara got on the ball more, it was really, for me, it was so poor first half. It had to be better second half. And Christensen's. While not great, showed a lot more drive.
Absolutely.
For me, the main thing was Dembele and his movement and Kearney getting much more involved. And
I'm glad
also,
okay.
I was just going to finish. And
go ahead.
I would agree with Kitt about fitness. You know, we are fit. The team is fit, and Hull did give a lot in that first half, and so they were a little bit more sitting back and on the playing on the counter-attack second half. So we were in their half a lot more. But, it was just, like I said, that 20-minute spell, 25-minute spell we had, we were pretty much all over them. They were just going with breaks. But we didn't make enough of it, unfortunately.
No, we didn't. We did create some chances. And, it's funny, Mike, because you're talking about the players that stood out for me just in the second half, because the first half was poor. Let's just call it what it was. The second half was better, and there was this probably 20-minute spell, like you mentioned, that Fulham were really in the ascendancy and got the goal, and I'll go to the goal in a second. But I want to talk about, you mentioned LVC, and then, of course, we're talking about Tom Kearney. But the one thing that I noticed is the urgency, getting on the ball, moving the ball quicker and faster. It was the pace that changed for me, Mike, and maybe it was bringing on someone like Moussa Dembele. I know it was a forced substitution. But talk about the difference between him being in there than Matt Smith. Nothing against Matt Smith, but how do Fulham look when he's on the pitch compared to Smith? I'm curious.
Okay, so if you're actually watching Smith, what Smith does is he sort of stays the sort of width of the penalty box. So, you know, just that central part of the pitch. And he looks to go the opposite side of the ball. So if your left back's got it, he will go over to the right side looking for the diagonal balls. And that's his movement. You know, he runs that line. Whereas Dembele, he's looking to run the channels. He's getting on the shoulder of the last man. He's pointing where he wants the ball. And so he's covering a lot of ground. And, it's the speed as well, you know, his pace, and that's what we lack. And that's the difference is. So you're either going for a very static player and we're looking to win balls off him, or you have another forward like Dembele who is going to run those channels and take the gamble of being on the end of a ball, which is put through on the floor or just over the defenders. And for me, that was the difference. And and like I say, Kearney as well. So you've got two options, but that's, you know, and that's why I would always have Smith as option B. You know, hopefully his injury isn't too bad. I'm not his greatest fan, but offers you something. And quite frankly, we're not playing to his strengths, really. I said that earlier. The first half, we weren't really playing the ball to him the way it should be if you're going to have him in the team, unfortunately.
Right.
But yeah, go on, Russell.
No, go ahead, Mike. No, I was just going to say, Mike, the one thing that the reason why I want to bring up the difference is because I see him like you as a plan B. And I noticed once Dembele comes on, we are just much more fluid. The movement overall, it just seems to move, like you said, quicker. There's more pace. There's more movement from player to player, whereas it's, like you said, it's just so much more static playing with Matt Smith. And I do hope that he's okay. Well, let me be the first to say I hope Matt Smith is okay. But I just have to say, with Moussa Dembele, we look like a more fluid club.
Yes, and it's all about options, isn't it? It's about running, making space for other players. I mean, McCormick never had a great game again, but he probably got on the ball more in the second. You know, he got on the ball a bit more in the second half because Dembele's taking two defenders away with him, which leaves McCormick with space. So it's, you know, be it Dembele, Taggart, that's what you're looking for. You need more fluidity up front.
I totally agree with you, and this match, again, you can learn so much from this match. That's why I'm glad that I watched it back, and you brought up some great points. You can learn a great deal about yourself by how you played with Matt Smith, how you play with Moussa Dembele, but also your opponent. You can learn a great deal from watching how they played against you, and maybe you can take from what they did to you and actually use it against someone else. I find that interesting, Mike. And this is going to be the challenge for Kit to learn from match to match what he can use to adapt Fulham and to attack opponents. Because in this match, you know, again, they might have been tiring down and you took advantage of them. And that's what's interesting about these three matches, because there always just seems to be this ascendancy in the second half for Fulham, whether it's late, whether it's in the middle of the second half. I think that's a good sign, but there's also the weakness of the poor play. You know, we can't put together two good solid halves or dare I say a good 60 minutes, because again, there seems to be a good 30 minutes, good 20 minutes, good 40 minutes, but not a good 90 minutes. We need a good 90 minutes, but let's move on. Let's go through a couple more key moments. And then I want to get to your man of the match. Let's talk about the goal by Tom Kearney. Again, like the goal by Howell. I actually felt we were going to score, Mike. I don't know how you felt being there. But we were starting to really put them under pressure. And again, the goal comes not out of nowhere. It really came from pressure. Talk about the goal by Tom Kearney.
Yeah, you're quite right. That just as you feel sometimes you're going to let a goal in, there was a feeling we were going to score. And, you know, as I say, Kearney had a shot 5 minutes before. And you know, he was battling with a ball on the edge of the box. It goes out wide, comes back inside. I think it was LVC who played it back to him. And he was in space already. And he puts it in from about 25 yards. And it was, you know, it was right in front of us again, which is always good to score away fans. And he's shown now that he's definitely can score those type of goals. But it's also shows that we can't rely on brilliant strikes all the time. You know, we need to be creating more clear-cut chances. But it was a great goal by him. And as I say, second half, he gets on the ball. We have played our best football when he is on the ball and in our sort of last third, and he's passing the ball around. Really, really on the right now. You know, we've seen him for four games made. He shouldn't play there anymore. Let's find a way of getting him inside the pitch somewhere, helping out O'Hara and Christensen.
Okay, so if he's going to be cutting in, who do you have out wide then, Mike? Because I agree with you about Kearney being more central. Then who goes out wide?
The thing is, Kit is not going to change his formation. He seems to want to have four wide midfielders and either a man behind a striker or two forwards. Me personally, I think we should look at a 4-3-3, 4-5-1, something like
that. I agree with you.
Give him, he needs to be one of the three midfielders. So you could have O'Hara and Christensen sitting, Kearney in the middle just in front of him, and two wide men, and a striker up top. And that's, I would consider that. You need to utilise your players in their best positions, and him out on right. wide right is not it. I don't think he's strong enough to be in a midfield two. Even against Wickham, I thought he was a bit lightweight. Leaves a lot on O'Hara's shoulders. So if there's a way of incorporating those three players in the middle, then we should look at doing it.
I totally agree with you. And that's why I just wanted just to touch on that a little bit, because I'm trying to figure out ways that you can best utilize your players. And I agree with you. He seems to be better in the middle, so he should be more central. But again, kid seems hell-bent on the formation that he has. And I would like to see him potentially look at a different formation, like you mentioned, Mike. Maybe you play with McCormack up front. You bring on Kaká, you play Kaká and Pringle. You mix them on either side. You play around with that a little bit. I don't know. You know, again, you play with your formations. You know, you try to get your best players in the best possible positions to succeed. And we're seeing too often, Mike, this is the frustrating thing, and I'm glad that we're talking about this. I think some of our players are not in their best positions to succeed, and I agree with you about Kearney.
Yeah, it was mentioned in pre-season, wasn't it? Yeah, we've got all these central midfielders. How is he going to fit them all in? And it's square pegs in round holes again, isn't it? We're waiting for Williams to get fit to have a proper wide right. man. Pringle is a wide man, but he's not a winger in that sense. So it's a bit unfair with people trying to compare him to that. But he's certainly much more natural on Kenny clearly is. The only other option, of course, is to put LVC out there, but then you lose his industrious type work that he does. You've got to give O'Hara a bit of protection and allow him to do his thing. So, yeah, I mean, we haven't even spoken to McCormack. You know, he's maybe captain, he may be star man, but quite frankly, at the moment, he does not deserve to start. So we're talking about one striker up front. You know, I think you have to be strong and say, you know, you're just not fit, you're not ready, you're not producing. You're going to have to sit
Mike,
out. You're going to give two other players a chance.
Mike, yeah, you're watching him a great deal. Does he really look like his fitness is a serious issue here?
I don't know if it's his fitness, but this is the second season he's with us. The second season he started slow. Fat? No. Is he a stocky little player? Yes. You know, I don't think it's a fit. I don't think it's a fitness issue in that sense. But he's not performing, and that's four games on the trot. And you know, we had this situation last year when Hugo, we had a great game, and then go hit a bad run, and everyone was saying, "Oh, you should drop him." And even I was saying, "You know, he's out of form. Drop him." And he kept going and going, hoping that he was going to play himself into form. I can see that happening now because McCormack is just not at the races at all.
Yeah. No, good stuff. And I totally agree with you. He's just not – he's not playing well early this season. Is it fitness? I don't know what it is, but he does look a little bit heavy to me. That's just – my feeling, I think he could have a super season, but right now he's just not playing well. All right, Mike, I know we're on limited time. Okay.
He doesn't look happy, Russ. He last night he was making, he's trying to peel off defenders when O'Hara's got the ball. The ball's, even I'm looking at it going, what are you expecting? There's no way O'Hara's going to get the ball to you at that angle. And he's peeling away and then jumping up, having a little hissy fit. And he does not look happy. And I don't know. He's had an extension to his contract. We apparently extended his contract. Is he happy about that? Is he happy at the club? He doesn't look happy at the moment. And, you know, is that affecting the rest of the team as well?
It's something to watch. Listen, there's no question about that. I'm glad that you brought that up because I saw you tweet that about Ross McCormack. Is he happy at the club? I don't know. But you know, again, Mike, it's something that I've talked to Emilio a great deal about. He's mentioned this to me that he's always arguing with the ref. He's always showing his frustration. And again, I'm always a fan of a player that just does his job. And that's not McCormack's a little bit different kind of guy. He shows his emotion, but it's very interesting that to you it looks like he's unhappy.
He's not playing well. There's no doubt about it. He's frustrated, but he's he was back to what I did. Remember, we spoke about this halfway through last season. He backs into players. He's looking for fouls when he's not looking at the ball. He's looking at their players. He's doing all that at the moment. You know, he's club captain at the moment with Parker not around. He needs to stand up and be counted and produce, and he's not doing it at the moment.
No, he certainly isn't. And you know, again, it's a fair assessment right now, Mike. But listen, I know you have limited time, so let's just talk about the winning goal by.
At the moment, Russ.
What?
I'm fine at the moment. It's fine.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the winning goal here. And what's frustrating here is that, you know, because we're going to be talking about a player in a little bit, because I'm going to tell you that my man of the match was Sean Hutchinson, because I thought he played a tremendous match. And unfortunately, you know, again, he can't do it by himself. And this goal actually showed itself that one man is not a defense. And talk about this goal by Sonoluco that actually gave Hull City the victory here.
Yeah, so it's at the far end to the away fans, and it just looked like a bit of a scramble. We're trying to get it away, and it's bouncing around, and then suddenly it's in the net. And having watched the replay, it was pretty much that as well. But, you know, Hutchinson is involved, trying to get it on the edge of the box are involved, and suddenly it drops. The striker's there on his own. Hutchinson's away from it. He can't get to him. And Bodrov's behind. And it's in the net. But the worst thing looking at it, and I've seen lots of comments, is Bodrov doesn't make a or enter try and get to the man. It's like he's, you know, just jogging or shattered. I mean, the goal goes in. You look at Bodrov. He bends over on knees. You know, is he shattered? Is it a fitness thing with him? It's not as if we were under tons of fifths. You know, it was so disappointing. But yeah, Hutchinson was there. I think he may have even tried to clear it twice. And as you say, he was covering Bodrov. He was at the end of lots of crosses, heading in and out.
He was everywhere, Mike. He was actually everywhere. Yeah.
He was, and as I tweeted earlier, and people who listen to the show know, Hutchinson's had a lot of criticism from me because of his, what I feel is a very poor, you know, he's not a very good passer of the ball from my point of view. But I'm not going to fault him for last night. He was my man of the match. He's covering an okay game, but he's covering Bodrov all the time. And I would say to anyone who hasn't watched the game, just watch the first 11 seconds of the game. And you'll see that we kick off, he knocks it long, it goes nowhere, it comes back, and then him go up ever. And what the video doesn't show is, because we could see it at the ground, is that Hutchinson has a right out go at Bodrov. And you see that later as well throughout the game. And, you know, again, the comments come up, does Bodrov speak English? We don't know. Never interview, have
no,
we?
That's a good...
But he was everywhere. He was clearances, headers and everything. So I'm not going to fool him. He was definitely man of the match. His best performance for me since he's joined, anyway. And he's made up for a lot of his... he made up in his performance what he did the other day with his tackle. I can't put the goal down to him.
I don't think you could put the goal down to Sean Hutchinson. And it's funny because he had a clearance right before that, Mike, right before the goal came. You know, again, a key clearance. And gentlemen, Jim was like, every other word was what a fabulous match Sean Hutchinson's having. And I mean, he didn't have to say that because you could see it. You know, again, I thought he was key in this match. And you're asking me, I completely agree with you. I've seen people say Jamie O'Hara, because Jamie O'Hara, again, Mike, very solid match. But for me, they're not in this match without Sean Hutchinson. So again, for me, the man of the match is Sean Hutchinson. And after, you know, after the foul in the last match, to come back and play like this, he deserves a little praise. And I'm glad that both you and I agree on that. I think he definitely deserves that. But before we wrap up, you know, again, I would say, you know, second for that would be Jamie O'Hara. Would you agree?
No, actually, while I'm critical of Kearney's first half appearance, he was, for me, the second best player on the pitch. I thought O'Hara was a little bit subdued and struggling a bit. The ball was being passed around him a lot. So, for me, it was and then.
Okay, very good, Mike. Very good. Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for on short notice doing this with me tonight. I really appreciate it and getting your take from being there. You were there last night, so thank you so much, Mike, for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it, my friend.
Okay, that's no problem. I hope I came through okay for most of the show.
You did, Mike. You did. We've had some technical difficulties, but listen, thank you so much for joining me. And that's going to do it for this episode. For Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Golden. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, Mike.
Cheers, Russ. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Okay.